Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 80. For May 13th, 2024, Citrix warns admins to mitigate a PuTTY bug, the LockBit admin has finally been identified, a Dell API was used to steal 49 million records, and hackers are exploiting a Lightspeed cache flaw in WordPress. Hello, everyone. Welcome. It is me, your absent host, Jim Guckin, back for another week of cybersecurity news stories that I think you need to be paying attention to for this upcoming week. Been quite a while between shows, a lot of stuff going on, but hopefully things have calmed down. I will be back. So, yay! But a couple interesting stories this week that I really think you need to be paying attention to because they could get lost in the shuffle. Because usually the big stories are always who got hacked, when got hacked, why got hacked, or who bought who. Those are usually the big stories in cybersecurity. But here's kind of ones that may actually have an operational impact on your organization. So for my first story, I would like to talk about Citrix. Citrix, most organizations use it, is a very big company out there, but they warned against a PuTTY bug, which is where I found this interesting. So Citrix themselves in their Zen Center package uses PuTTY integrated into the application. You can pull it out, but I didn't actually know it was integrated into it. So Citrix is saying, hey, we need you to manually mitigate a PuTTY SSH client vulnerability. Now, why is this dangerous? This could allow an attacker to steal the Zen Center's admin private SSH key. You know, not really a huge biggie out there, but you know, for those of you who don't know, the private SSH key gives, or could give an attacker the keys to the kingdom. And apparently this happens when in Zen Center, you click the Open SSH console button, because even though it's a button in Zen Center, it actually opens up PuTTY in the tool. And we'll talk more about the exact flaw later, but in Zen Center, this is being used multiple versions of Zen Center for Citrix Hypervisor 8.2 CU1 LTSR. So if you use Zen Center Hypervisor, you might have a vulnerable version. So if you didn't know, Zen Center manages Citrix Hypervisor environments. It can be used for deploying and monitoring all sorts of virtual machines. Kind of the same as VMware, but usually slightly more affordable, or maybe some organizations like to use it better. Now, VMware definitely has a lower overhead cost on the servers, but Citrix is just out there as popular and as good as that. So anyway, back to the thing. So talking about this, this actually is tracked as a CVE, which is a CVE 2024-31497. Now, as the time of this recording, there's no CVSS score yet, so I don't know how bad out of 10 it is. And really what this is a cryptographic flaw, meaning that the code that uses to create the SSH key has flaws or is able to be predicted in the encoding, so that someone can actually figure out what it is. So why this is dangerous? So you only need 58 viewings of the key going back and forth, and this includes logons. If you have 58 of them, you can use a mathematician derivative thing to decrypt the private keys. Now, PuTTY had already put out a warning about this, and PuTTY version 0.68 through 0.80 are impacted. Citrix, on the other hand, Zen Center 8.2.7 and newer will no longer include PuTTY in it by default. So, you know, if someone's in your network and they're monitoring the traffic between these end center servers, they could try to find these private keys and be able to crack it and then create themselves accounts and so forth. All kind of nastiness you don't really want in your network. So let's talk about what the fix is. Citrix, you know, says, hey, look, if you're not using the OpenSSH console, then just delete the PuTTY component. That's fine. Citrix also says, if you are using that OpenSSH console, the PuTTY that's in the tool, just replace it with a newer version, 0.81 or newer. If you don't use Zen Center, but you do use PuTTY, well, then definitely upgrade the PuTTY. And if you don't use either, what kind of tech are you? I mean, I thought the funny thing was that everyone at some point uses PuTTY. SSH into servers, you SSH into tools. PuTTY is one of those things that I think in my entire IT career, it's been there. So I don't really quite know why you wouldn't be using it, but check your environments. You want all PuTTY versions 0.8.1 or newer. And as I said, if you happen to use the Zen Center, make sure your version 8.2.7 or newer. Or if for some reason, and look, there are many reasons out there why people have to do it. If you can't update right away, I would recommend just deleting that PuTTY component. If you really need it and you're really heavy on it, just make sure it's updated. These are things you got to get to do to protect your own environment here. So highly recommend that you take the time out to make sure that your version is updated and you're protected against this. As I said, as of right now, there's no CVSS score, but it only takes someone sniffing the traffic for 58 connections, which includes logins, and you can quickly see how dangerous this could be. So please make sure you're updating your systems. As always, you should always make sure you're updating things as much as possible. But here was a very interesting situation where the PuTTY version was known, but I didn't know that Zen Center, and I've managed Zen Center environments in the past, I did not know that PuTTY was an integrated portion of it. So that's definitely something interesting. Now back for our second story this week, which I think, once again, to me is a very interesting one. The man who's just popped up here for the video version of the show has been identified as the developer and administrator of Lockbit. And this comes from the FBI, the UK National Crime Agency, and Europol, who announced that they finally have gotten the identity of the Lockbit admin, who on the forums went by Lockbit Sup for support, or Putin Crab. For those of you following Lockbit, I'm sure this will be a huge shock to you, and you may need to sit down for this. He was a Russian national. His name is actually, and I apologize in advance, because even though he was the runner of the Lockbit ransomware gang, I don't want to, no offense to him, Dmitry Yurevich Khoroshev. He is 31. He is from Voronezh, Russia. And they finally figured out who he was. He's the number one, you know, Lockbit for a while was one of those top ransomware as a service things that we were seeing all around as cybersecurity professionals. So what has Dmitry won for himself, at the age of 31? Sanctions. This opens up sanctions for him. Assets will be seized that are outside the country, which for Russia has been going on anyway for quite some time for Russian nationals, and travel bans, which once again have been going on for quite some time. Now, the USA is taking this one up. They're offering $10 million for information that leads to his arrest and or conviction. So really, if you know where Dimitri is, that the U.S. government can grab him and you could earn yourself a nice, cool $10 million. Ironically, though, Dimitri is very, you know, privacy-centric, has good OPSEC, so much so that he's bragged in the past that he would pay anyone $10 million who could identify him. Don't know if that still stands, because then you get, like, you know, maybe $20 million for it. Or is the USA's $10 million kind of the ha-ha to him? Either way, I don't know. But they've identified him through some of the information that they got back when we were still doing shows somewhat regularly. In February, Lockbit was taken down. Their servers were seized, and I'm assuming that some of this information is what led to him being identified as the, you know, the mastermind behind this. So, just as a refresher, Lockbit is a ransomware as a service, RAS, for those of you who love the acronym, sorry, R-A-A-S. Back in February, there was an international raid. A whole bunch of servers were taken over. Even the dark web, the Tor website, for those of you more in the know, were taken down and replaced with, hey, we seized this information. So they kind of had, I guess, digital fingerprints they were able to kind of leak back. So other information they kind of found during this, which I thought was fairly interesting, was between June 2022 and February 2024, when the attacks kind of went ablaze, Lockbit was part of about 7,000 attacks. And some of this was, 100 of these were against hospitals. So, you know, they were a major player in the game, especially in the time where a lot of hackers were like, yeah, we're not going to target hospitals. You know, that's kind of low. Yeah, Lockbit didn't really necessarily care about that. Now, on the good side, for talking about things that the governments have found in this, is about 2,500 decryption keys. So, yay. I mean, they kind of held this up like, hey, we have 2,500 decryption keys and we're contacting victims. You know, most victims would have either reversed to an earlier version, gone out of business, paid, whatever their story is going to be. Months later, a decryption key is not going to help you unless you're trying to recover some of the data for other reasons. But hey, I mean, at least they're handing out the decryption keys. Now, I will say, Lockbit, including Lockbit support and Putin Crab, have a new website in which they are still offering their services. But from what people can tell, it's not necessarily getting the same amount of traffic as it was. But it's kind of Lockbit's way of saying, hey, yeah, you took down our websites. You took a huge chunk out of my operations. But, you know, in the end, I'm still functional. But, you know, not necessarily as strong as I used to be. I mean, they may be able to build some up. More than likely, you're probably going to see that information get merged in with another group and then kind of go that way. Because the Lockbit name, while it's very popular and has been very successful in its attacks, is a tarnished name right now. And they'd be much better, like most organizations, to kind of shut down where they are, rebrand in a couple months with a brand new name, and, you know, something to make us scared. So for our third story this week, it's you know, fairly an interesting one. It has something to do with a company that most of us have either had or used, and this is about Dell. A Dell API was abused to steal about 49 million records. And this was originally broken on Breach Forms, which is a website where a lot of database leaks and stealer records and all this are being sold. It has a clear web and a dark web marketplace. But hey, they apparently got 49 million records. And I will say there's kind of a long story to this, but I did look at the records that the person was pointing out there and say, look, we're selling, here's just a sample of the records. Now, it's not all 49 million records. It's probably maybe a couple dozen records, but they kind of look legitimate. Now, on the other side, Dell started putting out notifications to its customers after the threat actor put up the data for sale. And they said, look, we are currently investigating an incident involving a Dell portal, which contains a database with limited types of customer information related to purchases from Dell. And this is all part of the Dell breach notification they sent out. Now, the person who did this on the breach forums is known as Menelik, M-E-N-E-L-I-K. Just to make sure I, you know, keep the name out there because I don't want to make any bad blood against anyone. And the data that was leaked, granted, as far as Dell is, like, it's not credit card information, it's not anything along the lines, but it's like name, your physical address, your Dell system, your service tag, your item description, the date of order, and kind of some related warranty information. So it's not like your credit card or anything along those lines, social security number, stuff that they may collect on that, but it is stuff that can be used with other information out there to get a bigger picture of you, and it's definitely usable for phishing. So I can now send an email out and say, hey, this is Dell support. Here's your, you know, service tag number. If you checked it, it would totally line up the day you ordered it. Man, this could confuse someone who's not paying attention well. Now, how did this happen is very interesting. So Menelik registered as a Dell partner. He used fake information, not even a real email address or anything, just fake information. And then checked back 2 days later. And without verifying that he owned the account or anything, it let him in. He was approved. And then once he was approved, then he used a program that he made to generate a 7-digit service tag, which is what Dell has so that it can identify your system when you call in for support. It makes it very easy. And then when he passed that 7-digit service tag on, he scraped all of the information off the Dell partner website so that he could gain, you know, the warranty information, the address, when it was purchased, all this information. Now, what was interesting in this was Dell wasn't doing any kind of rate limiting on these websites. He did about 5,000 requests per minute for 3 weeks. That's a ton of records that he's going to, you know, grab from Dell's portal website. Now, once again, this isn't a website that's accessible to, like, you know, the average me and you. This is like a Dell service partner who might want to look up and see, hey, is there a warranty on this particular piece of equipment? And just a count of some of the records he was able to get, according to him, because we haven't seen it all yet. He has about 22. I'm just going to round up. You can look at the actual numbers in the show notes available from this page. But monitors, about 22 million monitors, about 450,000 Alienware notebooks, about a little less than 200,000 Chromebooks, Inspiron notebooks at about 11.2 million, desktops 1.7 million for Inspiron, Latitude laptops about 4.1 million, Optiplex 5.1 million, PowerEdge servers 780,000, Precision desktops about 790,000, notebooks about 500,000, Vostro notebooks about less than 200,000, desktops about 38,000, XPS notebooks about 1 million, XPS and Alienware desktops a little short than 400,000. So that is a lot of records in which he has access to, and he is willing to sell. Now, Melenik is only selling to one person, according to everything I've seen on his posts online. He has about 4 or 5 different sample databases he gives out. Most have about, you know, a dozen to 20 different records in it each. So you're not seeing the entire thing, but you can see the database appears to be larger than what it looks like. I have no way of independently verifying if these people have the information or not, but it looks very legit. So here's where it gets interesting. So Menelik, after he scraped the 49 million records, told Dell, you know, after he did everything, between April 12th and another on April 14th. Now, he claims Dell has did not respond. Now, Dell's claiming, yeah, we knew before they sent the email, but for some reason still didn't fix it until 2 weeks later, which is a little weird for me. Now, as I said, Melnick is just selling it to one person per a post that I did see online. There are rumors that it was sold already, and that was just because breach forums tends to take down if there's no link. Like if you say, hey, here's evidence and the link doesn't work, then it gets killed. And that's what happened, according to Melnick. But as I said, he's also showing some of the data he has. And Dell's response is saying, hey, look, he probably has gotten something. Now, Dell, due to being an active investigation, is not going to tell us whether the information is accurate or not. But the fact they're notifying their customer, to me, kind of leans in that direction. The fact that this isn't really a hack. He just used a partner API to kind of scrape all that data down. We've seen these kind of things happen before. We've seen it happen in LinkedIn and several other attacks. But it's something out there that you should be kind of concerned about, especially if you have a Dell. And I'm probably on that list somewhere because I've had Dells in the past. I have purchased for other family members. My current computer, obviously, is something I've built myself, you know, being the geek that I am. But you have to watch out because this will definitely be used for phishing. Because once, you know, that first person gets it. And as I said, I just looked the other day, which was Saturday. And he was still taking bids. So once that person has it, who knows what they're going to do with it? More than likely, they'll use it for whatever their kind of attack's going to be, and then they'll, you know, move it on to the next thing. So I highly recommend if you have a Dell, please, if you're getting emails from Dell support over the next couple of days or weeks or months, be cautious on it, because this information is now all available out there and it could be used to pivot to, you know, other sorts of attacks or trying to get other information from you. Like, hey, you know, here's a PDF of a bill from Dell. Here's all your information. It looks right. You click it and then you get, you know, malware. Who knows where this is going to fall? I'm just saying, be careful, because 49 million records is a big thing. And there's people out there who are slowly piecing all of these breaches together to get a more full idea of, you know, a person they may be targeting, or layering several attacks on each other so that you know this one didn't have credit card information or banking information, but now I may have your email address. I may be able to pair it to one where, you know, a bank was bank database was hit, and now you can see both. So that's what I'm saying, be careful, because you never know where this kind of attack is going to go. For our final story this week, and it's just another poor punch to WordPress. And that has to do with a plugin in WordPress, where it seems like most of the hacks come in that don't have this kind of longevity, where, you know, WordPress is very popular. Plugins are very popular in WordPress to get the site to do what you wanted to do. In fact, I don't think I've seen a WordPress site in forever that didn't have some kind of plugin for it. And to kind of segue into this, one of the more popular plugins that you see happen to do with speeding up the way your page loads, improving the visitor experience. So, you know, you're not waiting for things to take a while or to come in slowly. Everything loads quickly and helps, you know, kind of boost your Google search ranking. All this happens to do because how quickly your web page responds is very important to Google in its ranking. Now, 5 million sites utilize this particular plugin we're talking about here, which is called Lightspeed Cache. And it's a WordPress plugin that does everything I just mentioned. It makes your site work better for your end user. And there is an organization called WP Scan, which is by a company called Automatic. And they have seen that threat actors are specifically scanning for this Lightspeed Cache plugin. Now, I don't use this plugin myself, but if you do, I would be definitely rushing to your own WordPress website and updating and or disabling this plugin. But WP Scan, which is kind of a security app for WordPress, has noticed an uptick in this for hackers looking for versions older than 5.7.0.1. That's a mouthful. In fact, there was one in the WP Scan report, which I thought was very interesting. They had found one single IP address, which is available in the show notes, that scanned about 1.2 million probes to WordPress websites looking for that particular plugin. Now, on the good thing from WP Scan confound that most websites have been updated, but there's still a massive amount out there that are still, you know, needing to be updated. In fact, their estimated impacted version out there, WP Scan's, is 1.835 million websites out there. And this happens all the time because WordPress sites sometimes get created and they get abandoned for one reason or another, or people aren't keeping up with them, or all these other versions of it. That's a lot of websites that can be used. So we've talked about how hackers are looking at it. Now, I really want to talk about what is this? So this flaw is tracked as CVE 2023-400000, right? Yeah. Anyway, so this one has a CVSS score of 8.8 out of 10. So really one you want to make sure is patched as soon as possible. It's very dangerous for a hacker to use against you. It is technically listed as a cross-site scripting attack, but it's also, it doesn't need to be authenticated. So you don't need a username and password. So anyone can do this kind of cross-site scripting attack for it. The main version from what we've seen on attacks are JavaScript, a malicious JavaScript code that gets run. This allows code to get injected into the WordPress files. It can inject code directly into the database. And what the target of these tends to be is to create a new admin account so that they can kind of take over the website. And they're doing it kind of clever because they're not just calling it like Axword admin or whatever name you might want to think of. They're actually calling it, there's two versions I've seen so far, which is a WP sup dash user, so WordPress support user, and WP dash config user. Both of these, I think, even me who has worked with WordPress sites may look at these and go, oh, they're just probably just default ones from some plugin somewhere. But these two are being used in this attack. So if you see either of these, WordPress support dash user, WordPress dash config user, WP sup dash user, WP dash config user, these are indications that your WordPress site may be compromised. There's some other IOCs out there, but these are kind of the easy ones that most people can look for pretty quick. And it may not just be these two. They may have changed tactics. So any kind of account that you may not normally see should be an indication something's gone wrong. So what can you do to protect yourself? This is the same as we've talked about for everything. Constantly update your plugins. In WordPress, if the plugin that you're using hasn't been updated in 6 months or a year, get rid of it. Find some other new plugin that does the same thing. It's going to be problematic. And backups. Make sure you're backing up your WordPress instances and keeping several versions of the backup so that if you have to fall back, you kind of have that to go to, because you may not be checking your WordPress code every day. I don't check my WordPress code every day. So if something slips in there, you want to make sure you can fall back to an older version pre-compromise. Now, you may lose some data, you may lose some other things, but I think we all agree that's probably a little better than running compromised code on your website. So just make sure you're updating, you're removing what doesn't need to be there, and you're backing up where you need to be. But WordPress tends to be a heavily attacked vector because all of these plugins and people sometimes forgetting to update them makes a lot of websites vulnerable, which they can use to attack other things or, you know, install malware that downloads to people who visit your site. Either way, you don't want to be getting messed in it. Please make sure you're updating it. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the show. You can find more information about the show, including the show notes, which have the notes and some more information and even the links to the stories I've gotten these stories from, all available on Cybersecurity News Byte under this episode. You'll find the show notes and links available there. You can always find more information about me visiting my website, jimguckin.com. So you can go to cybersecuritynewsbytes.com for this show, or you can go to jimguckin.com to learn more about me. Either way, if you want to reach out to me, whether for a show or personal reasons, please feel free to reach out to me, me@jimguckin.com. That's an email address that goes directly to me, and I can try to answer as much as I can to help you out. Because we either survive in security together or we drown. It's just the way it is, because we can't all be on the dark web or researching all the news stories all the time. So it's kind of a community thing that I think we all have to get used to. Other than that, please make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Byte with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbyte.com.